Hey, what's up?
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. Just getting ready to head to work.
Now that you've slept on it, I wanted to get your brief, albeit review on Mortal Engines. I've been, which is a good sign, by the way.
Yeah, it's true. For me, I'm going to stick with what the rating that I gave it initially. I thought it was a B+. I personally thought, like, I got to give the nod to a very original story, something that's never been done.
Right. And
visually, it was really, really cool. The acting, I thought, was really, really good as well. So, I thought it was a solid film, man. Like, I think it's probably one that I'll own.
That's high. I mean, I don't want to say that's high praise because you probably own what, over 300 movies, so it's not hard to get into Kyle's library.
That's but true. That's true.
I will agree with you. I think I'm going to elevate it to. I said a B yesterday. I'm going to give it an extra bump, a B+.
All right. What? So explain your thought process and
okay.
What made you change your mind.
What made me change my mind was, as you mentioned, the original story. I was just like, you know, it wasn't flawless. There are certainly some, not plot holes, but obviously it's an apocalyptic movie in that, you know, it's the remnants of people who survived basically a nuclear war. That's what I understood. And yeah. So because of that, they kind of go back in time a little bit. Like there's this funny moment at the beginning where they're like, oh, let's look at the screen era. And they have like an old iPhone and then like a broken TV. So they've obviously went backwards in technology. However, it's not quite consistent because they're using like coal engines and metal engines to power their mobile cities. But they're also, I don't know. That didn't always
It's really weird. Like, sorry, I don't mean to cut you off, but like it seems like they're still really smart, but they just don't have a lot of that older tech available.
Yeah.
I thought it was really weird how maybe just like the coal stuff was really the only resource that was usable.
Right.
And maybe that's why they had these massive literal wheels that were like transformers pretty much. Like they could just shift and move according to what their needs were, but they were powered by coal.
But how do you have such a sophisticated thing like a mobile city but you don't have a television? Like I could have used maybe a little back, and there were moments in the story where they showed what happened prior to time in that era, but maybe I could have used a little bit more to understand what was usable and what wasn't. I don't know, I got lost a little bit with that.
I think they should have done a better job of really explaining, you know, what was lost and why they don't have it anymore.
Right. Yes. That would have helped. But that's, you know, there were a few times I was like, eh, this doesn't quite make sense. But ultimately I had a great time. I thought
I was just gonna say
the story wasn't great, but it was good enough to where I cared about the characters. There were some interesting twists. Hugo Weaving is the villain. Fantastic as always. You know, we made a comment during the movie, but this guy is an underrated actor. Like everything he's in, he's good. Some of the other characters, they were good enough. Maybe I would have liked a couple more, maybe not necessarily big names, but a few more recognizable faces. But the newcomers were good enough that it didn't distract from. And ultimately, like you said, visually, it was awesome. And I'm giving it extra points for being original, and it was entertaining. I would watch it again. You know, if it showed up on my iTunes feed for $3.99, I probably would buy it. So I'm not going to pay full price for it, but I wouldn't hesitate to go again. And because it got 27% on Rotten Tomatoes, that's ridiculous. It's not that bad. To me, it's like a 50% Rotten Tomatoes. Some people will like it, some people won't. But generally speaking, I'm a big fan of the Peter Jackson group. That's who made it. All the people that helped on Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit and all that stuff. And yeah, it definitely beat my expectations, and I had some expectations.
Yeah. I had kind of mixed feelings. I did do a little bit of thinking about it, but I had some mixed feelings about the whole Shrike character.
Yes.
But because initially I was kind of like, all right, this is a little weird. But once they kind of dove into the backstory, and then you were able to really see, I think that Peter Jackson, that group, like, they're so good at, like, expressing character emotion. Like, yep. I just thought that it was so cool how, like, you know, this guy was hellbent on, you know, this girl keeping her promise. And, you know, like, am I spoiling things in this, or do I need to keep my trap shut a bit?
I mean, let's keep it mild spoilers.
Okay. But, so, yeah. Okay. So, I don't know what to limit it to, but I thought the Shrike character was actually really well done, because they didn't have tons of time to give, like, all of his backstory.
Yeah.
But I think they did just enough to make you, like, feel for him.
Right.
So and just, like, his facial expressions and the, the way that they made him and stuff, I thought it was really cool.
I would add, I agree to all of it. I would add, however, that was another one of those technological misunderstandings from my point of view. Like, this is kind of a spoiler a little bit, but this character is like, it's hard to explain what he is. Had he been straight robot, I think that I would have been okay with it. But there was like this weird blend of robot and human. I don't know. It didn't make a lot of sense. Yeah. And not to mention, if we can't even use a cell phone anymore, how are these things even around? That was just one of those things that I couldn't quite understand. I got over it. I mean, it's not that big of a deal, but that was just I don't know. Sometimes I think they got a little carried away in the visual aspect, that sometimes the story didn't quite make sense. But I agree with you. At first, you're like, oh, this character is just another villain in the story. But really, it was much more complex than that. And it was, yeah. The character itself, A+. The creation of the character, a little, still don't really know what was going on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they do give a little bit of, you know, a little bit of story with it, where basically he's like a resurrected being. So, right. Like, I guess he was a human and someone turned him into like kind of half human, half robot. And it also was able to, you know, kind of wipe his memory clean. So he didn't have to feel, you know, the painful memories that he had and stuff. And you know, that's what he wanted to do for the girl as well. But, I mean, I don't know, man. I see exactly where you're coming from. Like, overall, like, it was entertaining and I really enjoyed it and I was captivated entire time. But I do agree that there were some inconsistencies. And
yeah, exactly.
Overall, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, same here. Overall, they weren't so ridiculous that it distracted from the story. You still had a great time, but there were still some, I don't know. I like to at least understand what's going on. And some of the times I'm like, this just is weird. These crazy cities, they're building huge weapons, and yet, you know, they can't eat normal food, or I don't know. Anyways, don't let that distract from the fact that this movie is worth seeing in theaters. I would recommend it. I haven't seen a lot of movies this month, but of the movies I've seen in December, I would say this right now is probably the most entertaining one out there in terms of just entertainment value.
Yeah. I've heard good things about that, as well as Bumblebee. So those
are
probably, I mean, I don't know. Maybe they'll, you know, go above and beyond Mortal Engines for me. Maybe they won't, but
time will tell, and we'll have to do another podcast and revisit that as far as maybe like action movies in December.
Action movies in December, and also top 10 of the year. So exactly. That's what I was about to get to,
we need to be able to do a top 10, and I've got to get caught up on some films myself. So I'm taking a vacation next week. Hopefully I'll have some downtime and I can catch up on a couple of those.
You know what you need to do is, who are you flying with to Nashville? I know you're going to Nashville soon.
It's with Delta.
Ooh, good news. Great news, actually. If you're lucky enough to be on a newer Delta plane, which I think you will be because of the duration of the flight, they have a lot of new movies that you can watch. So you're going to have to fit in four. I mean, they've got – what did I just watch? I just went to California. I watched – man, oh, I watched a crazy movie called Hotel Artemis. Very wild.
Okay.
I think that you would love Hotel Artemis. But anyways, you're gonna have a bevy of new movies, so you gotta get four of those in to and from.
So is that typical Delta, like being able to watch movies?
I think it's typical, yeah. It's every Delta flight I've been on this year, and that's like probably 7 or 8 they've had. And make sure you take headphones that you can plug in. It's not wireless connection, which you do. You've got the plug-in Beats.
I do, yeah.
You can plug those into the back of the seat, and there's a huge – I mean, you'll be able to watch Incredibles. You'll be able to watch, I mean, Mission Impossible if you wanted, which you've already seen, so why would you? But tons of –
Well, I'll tell you why I would, because it was the best movie of the year so far, and I've only seen it once. So
That's a great point, absolutely.
But
so,
in the sense of getting caught up on some other movies I haven't seen, obviously that would –
I would recommend watching four movies you haven't seen that you think that you would like or that have been on your list, because there's nothing else you can do, so you might as well catch up. And credit to Delta for having a good selection of movies. So they're like, honestly, my preferred – I don't know how we got on this tangent as we're talking about Mortal Engines, but that's probably my preferred airline right now to fly with, Delta.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to it because I have a pretty lengthy flight to – Atlanta Sunday night, and I should be able to get in one or two in that flight, and then should be able to get one or two or at least most of that on the way home.
I'm flying tomorrow night to California. I'll text you the list of movies, that way you can kind of be prepared.
Yes,
so you may so that. You see. All right, dude. Well, have a wonderful day. Thanks for talking Mortal Engines for a second, and I'll see you around.
Hey, sounds good, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yep. See you, dude.
Yeah.
No surprise with the second thing that caught my attention, and I'm sticking with the Lakers for points 2 and 3, so maybe I should have just done a Lakers podcast, so I apologize for clogging the pod with all Lakers stuff, but there's been a lot of chatter in the NBA about the Lakers and Anthony Davis. And I've gone back and forth on this point a few times. So there's really a couple different camps. There is the camp that is get Anthony Davis at all costs. Trade Brandon Ingram, trade Kyle Kuzma, trade Lonzo Ball, trade whoever, anyone, take it all to get Anthony Davis. Then there's the camp who's like, well, the Lakers' young core is really good, so they can't have everyone. If they want to take picks and two people, they can do it. For the record, I'm mostly in that camp. And I know that sounds crazy, and hear me out. I don't, man, it's even saying it, it's crazy. Because in the NBA, if you want to win, you have to have multiple all-star caliber players, and the Lakers don't. But what I have a hard time reconciling as a Lakers fan is missing the playoffs for 5 straight years, and all you have to show for it is Anthony Davis. Which, that's nice. Don't get me wrong, that's nice. But it's hard to accept that every top draft pick that you collected over a 5-year period of time, a lot of which, if you remember, and I'm sure you don't, because most people who listen to this pod aren't Laker fans, the Lakers were very fortunate to receive a lot of these players. That pick, I mean, if you look at Julius Randle, D'Angelo Russell, Brandon Ingram, and Lonzo Ball, any one of those players could have went to
either Boston or Philadelphia in a trade protection. Excuse me, not a trade protection, a draft lottery protection. So the Lakers got lucky 4 years in a row by keeping their picks and bumping back a draft pick that was owed to those teams because they got lucky. If any one of those years the lottery balls didn't go in favor of the Lakers, they would have been without a pick in the middle of their worst stretch in franchise history. So to forego all of that stuff for one player, that's hard to swallow. Say goodbye to Julius. Well, we already did. We said goodbye to D'Angelo. Now we have to say goodbye to Ingram, Lonzo, and Kuzma, and Hart. Six players over 5 years for one. That's hard. That's really hard. And I don't think I can do it. And now that I talk myself through it, I can't. But on the, you know, it's fair to say none of these guys are ever going to be as good as Anthony Davis. And so let's give them up. So, I don't know. It's just really hard. I mean, that'd be like in your own life, giving up your nice car, any nice vacations, any toys to live in a nice house. And some people might say, yeah, I can drive a 1990 Honda Civic to work. And it's no big deal because we live in a great house. For me, I think I'm more interested in living in an average to a slightly above average house, having a nicer car, going on vacations, doing all the stuff that life provides. So the only contradiction to that is the NBA has shown that the people that are the most successful, the franchises, are the ones that have mansions and not a lot of other toys. And if you get a mansion and a Tesla, like, then you're really living. So it's hard to give all that up for one player. Now, I will say this. Over the last couple years, the NBA has increasingly become a place where veteran players on bad teams get bought out, and there's like a mini free agency. Every January, February, there's like 5 to 10 quality players that get bought out of their deals and they finish out a contract somewhere else. So if you really think about it, even if they were to trade all those players, they could go out and get a couple dudes in buyouts. They could go out and maybe bring in a Jimmer Fredette, who's had a nice career in China. And he's not the only player that's played in China and then come back to the NBA and been successful. You think about Michael Beasley. He's been mildly successful. But there's a couple of those guys. J.R. Smith's another one. So they could easily flesh out a roster by losing all those people. But you're sacrificing a long-term potential dynasty. Not saying, before you get on me, I'm not saying they're on the road to a dynasty. That's not it at all. But if you want to create a Warriors-type run of success, you need your draft picks to develop. And by trading them all away, you're saying goodbye to the long-term and hello to maybe one or two championships in the short-term. So, as a Lakers fan, I can tell you we're not really too keen on the idea of one or two championships and then being bad again. We're used to having dynasties. We've had several dynasties throughout the franchise tenure. So, bottom line is, as you guys can tell on the pod, I don't know what the right decision is. And that's tough. Number three, sticking with the Lakers theme, the third thing that caught my attention was the Lakers played the Pelicans in Los Angeles, and that was the return of Julius Randle. That was a tough one when he left in free agency to the Pelicans. It made sense, and it didn't make sense. It especially didn't make sense when he signed a one-year deal with the Pelicans, something the Lakers could have offered him. Apparently, you know, he just wanted a change of scenery and an opportunity to have a bigger role. Well, whoa. Little did I know, he found a big role. He's averaging almost a double-double, about 20 points and 10 rebounds in 27 minutes a game. At this rate, He's going to be a B-level free agent next year, and he's going to command a 4 or 5 year deal for about $20 million a year, which is good for him. That's fantastic. Makes me wonder, if the Lakers don't get a star next year's free agency, do you consider bringing this guy back? And I'm ready to do it. I might even shorten the years, but increase the money. Maybe do a 2-year deal for $60 million. I don't know. I know that sounds crazy, but he has all-star level numbers right now. And man, he has really impressed me. He's putting in the work. He's a high character guy. Ah, man, this is precisely, guys, why the Anthony Davis thing is so hard for me, because what if Kuzma and Lonzo go on to be a guy 5 years in who's averaging a double-double and making all-star games? It's hard to give that up, knowing how young they are. So if I'm the Lakers and you strike out in free agency next year, I'm considering bringing Julius Randle back into the fold, because he has proven that he is a high-level NBA player. Is he an MVP? No. Is he a perennial all-star? Maybe. I mean, the numbers certainly indicate that he's capable of that. And that might be a better bargain and an easier pill to swallow with his age being so young than going out and paying an older guy. So, there you go. 1, 2, 3, LeBron, Anthony Davis, Julius Randle. That's enough Lakers talk for the week. But they're in a very interesting / tough spot going forward, and they got to do something if they want to contend for a championship, because all signs point to trouble in terms of not being able to land another superstar, and if they do, it's going to cost them a high price. So I'm starting to wonder if the LeBron era in Los Angeles may come and go without a championship, and that is not a thought I like to have. The last thing that caught my attention was BYU football, a big, big win over Western Michigan, in which Zach Wilson was 18 of 18 with 4 touchdown passes. Man, he has gotten better each and every week. I mean, it was really low after the Boise State loss. I know some people were encouraged by that performance, but you hate to lose in that fashion. But ever since then, there's been steady improvement. And there's a lot of positives going into next year. There's still some concerns in my eyes. One of those is the running back position. Though Riley Burt, over 100 yards, a touchdown run, showed that explosive ability in the open field. I guess the question that we all wonder about Riley Burt is, does he have the vision of a Jamal Williams? Or, you know, that's probably an unfair comparison, but does he have the vision in traffic to make cuts, to get extra yards, like maybe even a Squally was showing at the beginning of the year? Maybe, because there were a few runs against Western Michigan where it wasn't just pitch him the ball to the outside and let him run. On his touchdown run, even, he hit one of the gaps and made a man miss and then exploded for a touchdown. So maybe he won't be the starting running back, but maybe this game, with an off season of coaching and training, potentially he can be a change of pace running back where he gets 7 to 8 looks a game. So there might be something there with Riley Burt. I know after the Utah game in the second half, we were all, when I say we, us BYU fans, we were all like, well, this is why he doesn't play, but maybe there is still some untapped potential there. I'd love to see him turn into an Adam Hine. Hine had a great senior season. That was Tanner Mangum's freshman year before he got hurt. So maybe we can see something like that next year. Some concerns. I was listening just barely to Kalani Sitake's post-game conference. He said something that is true and also concerning. And one of the first things he said in his post-game conference was, I've been trying to let Zach Wilson loose for a while now. The positives, yes, that's exactly what BYU needs to do. The second half offense for Brigham Young, that is exactly the offense that I think they need to establish, not only with Zach Wilson, But going forward, a pass-first offense that sets up the run. They can use the short game. There were some incredible intermediate throws from Zach Wilson. There was also the deep bomb to Ahifo. The passing was, I mean, they were perfect. So you can't use any other word than fantastic to describe the BYU passing offense, especially in that second half. That's the offense that I want to see. That was fun. It was explosive. There were big plays. There was great design. That was, I know I keep repeating myself here, but that is precisely the kind of offense that I want to see going forward, because it's fun and I think it's successful, and I think BYU can be successful in an offense like that. They're going to have Bushman back. They're going to have Neil Pau. They're going to have Hefo again. They're going to have a healthy Gunnar Romney. They're going to have true freshman Chase Roberts, and from experience, as I called a couple of his games over his high school career, from a play-by-play perspective, he's got the talent. So they've got the pass-catching ability. Now, some may say, well, you know, these guys are not going to be able to beat a tough man coverage. Well, you know, you don't always have to use individual route running to defeat a bump press man coverage. And that's where I think we need to continue to implement passing schemes, crossing routes that highlight our players' ability. But we saw it in the second half that we're capable of it, and we need more of that. I want to get away from the power eye that we used in the first six games, and I want to see the second half offense. That's the first time this year, quite frankly, that I felt like this is the offense that can lead us to victory against good teams if we're playing like this. I never felt that way against Wisconsin or even Arizona. Even those were wins, I felt like those were games in which the BYU offense had to be perfect. No turnovers, ball control. That's all fine and dandy, but when you're able to put up, what was it, 42, I think it was 42 points in the second half. That and it was chunk plays, it was explosive plays. That's what I want to see. So the concern is, from Kalani's comments, what took so long? What do you mean I've been trying to let him loose for several weeks? You're the head coach. You're the one who determines that. And so I don't love hearing comments like that, because it makes me feel like Kalani maybe doesn't have control over his football team. If he wants to let Zach Wilson loose, he has the power to do so as the head coach. And so hopefully next season we do let Zach loose all year long. Let him throw the football. He only threw the football 18 times. I'd love to see that number in the high 20s, 25 to 28. But understandably so. That's very nitpicky. I'm not being pessimistic. I'm just, you know, it's understandable. Because we had so many chunk plays, we didn't have 9, 10, 11 play drives, so the total number of offensive plays were a little lower than you would typically expect. But I want the pass to set up the run, which is exactly what we saw in that game, and we had to do it by, it wasn't by design, it was by choice, because of the unavailability, if that's even a word, of several BYU running backs. So I think it was by choice that they had to go pass first. And I think we saw what we need. And hopefully Jeff Grimes, you know, I'm bullish on him, but hopefully he saw what he needed to see in that second half to implement a new offensive scheme that's pass first, that highlights Zach Wilson's abilities. Because, man, that guy can really throw the football. I was a little skeptical at first, but he had three throws in that game that convinced me that he is above average to sensational arm talent. The first one, there was a play in, it might have been the early third quarter, where he dodged a sack and threw a bullet to Neil Pau across the middle. It was about a 20-yard pass that Pau turned into about a 40-yard gain with some yak. But my goodness, that was a dime in between traffic. Fantastic. The second one, the long ball on the money in stride to Aleva Hefo. That was a thing of beauty. And then number three was the touchdown pass to Dax Milne, where he scrambled a little bit and then threaded the needle to the back of the end zone. Those are not your everyday average pass from a quarterback. They're above average. They're really elite level stuff. So there's a lot to be positive about. It was, this season was an improvement. And if they can continue to build upon this, tweak the offense a little bit, find some defensive playmakers at the linebacker position, specifically if they can get a little more depth on the defensive line, they've got potential to do something great next year. But it's going to require work. It's going to require changes on the coaching staff. And I think for once this season, we saw what it's going to take and what it needs to look like for us to be successful. So, great bowl win. It's one of the best bowl wins BYU's had in a long, long time. And that's, it's certainly the sip of positivity that we all need going into the offseason. So, congratulations to BYU football for ending on a high note. And there are certainly some pieces going forward that make it exciting, especially for me. You know that I've been down on BYU football a lot of the season, but that second half, really, really impressive. I'm optimistic that if they can implement that scheme going forward, they have a chance to have a good year next season.